what defines, you know, back to purpose and how our customers see us, our users. And you can say our users and their view and how they consider Coloplast is key, right? Because they are the ones that we are helping. And what defines us is our decisions and the choices we make as an organization. All the way down to, you know, a salesperson sitting somewhere in a remote country, having a maybe difficult conversation with a distributor or one of a person from the authority. Every step here defines us.
Welcome to the Leading Transformational Change podcast. Our passion is to help you lead and develop organizations with a remarkably healthy culture that can positively impact all of its stakeholders. Every other Thursday, we drop hour-long conversations with world-leading researchers and experts on culture, ethics, change, and leadership. My name is Tobias Sturesson, and I'm your host and the co-founder of Art Management. What would it look like if everyone inside our organization saw it as their personal responsibility to contribute to ethical conduct and cultural health and speak up if they faced concerns? While this is probably a utopian idea, I believe it is still a critical pursuit. No matter how large an HR ethics and compliance function is, it can't and shouldn't even try to police all behavior within an organization. We must empower our employees to reflect more deeply on their decisions and actions, and our managers to be aware of the signals they send and how they shape culture. Yet, as I think all our podcast listeners know, this is much easier said than done. This spring, I've been having many conversations with practitioners on the podcast to better understand how they are working to integrate cultural health and ethics across their organization. Over the last two episodes, we've learned from Klaus Moosmeyer's work at Novartis and Gleb Bakalov's work at Uker Energo. Today, I'm speaking to Martin Lönnstrup, Chief Compliance Officer at Coloplast. The company was founded in 1957 as the nurse Elise Sørensen invented the world's first adhesive ostomy bag to help her sister who had just had an ostomy operation and feared going out into the public. Today, Coloplast, a Danish multinational company, has about 16,000 employees globally with a mission to make life easier for people with intimate healthcare needs. Before Coloplast, Martin was the Vice President Group Chief Compliance Officer at the Swedish industry giant Sandvik and has held leading positions at both Maersk and Falck. In our conversation, we discuss how Martin sees all of their employees as compliance officers, why he doesn't really struggle with getting buy-in from fellow executives, and why his team reduced the company's code of conduct by 60%. It was a truly insightful conversation. However, before we jump into the conversation, this episode is brought to you by the Culture and Leadership Program. Today, delivering excellent products and services is crucial but insufficient. To sustain trust with key stakeholders, organizations must prioritize integrity, align decisions with their values, and cultivate a workplace culture that both delivers results and supports employee thriving. This is a daunting task. Despite lofty aspirations, ambitious HR initiatives, and compliance programs, managers and executives are often ill-equipped to nurture cultural health, drive behavioral change, or make values-based decisions under pressure. Our company, Heart Management, has designed an organization-specific transformative program to help you address these issues in a sustainable way. You can visit cultureandleadership.org for more information. cultureandleadership.org for more information and to download a brochure. Now, without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Martin Lönnstrup. Martin, it's truly a joy to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks, Tobias, and thanks for having me. I very much appreciate it.
I wanted to start with you a little bit personally. What brought you into the world of ethics and compliance?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think for me, I started out in the legal area, you can say, during my education. Actually, I had earlier years, we had a legal topic in school, and we had a very inspiring teacher back then who were, even though that was a very tiny course of all the courses I attended, this leader or teacher, you can say, was very inspiring and caught my attention. And after that, a very small course, I decided to study law. And then you can say, after completing your law degree, I moved the classic way, you can say, into the legal functions, the legal departments, negotiating contracts and, drafting contracts, templates and doing negotiations as an in-house legal counsel and so on. So I guess what then got me into the exciting area of business ethics and compliance is actually some years later, I had worked in a Danish conglomerate called AP Møller Mærsk. I had worked there as a head of legal for a while. And after that period, I got an opportunity to move outside of Denmark and work out of Houston, Texas for one of the business areas in Mærsk called Mærsk Oil at that time. Today, they are actually bought by Total Energies, but it used to be its own oil company, in a regional head of legal and compliance role. And interesting enough, even though that was, negotiating big oil drilling contracts in Latin America, US and Africa, it became more about compliance and business ethics, actually. So I think that's where it happened, because the role that I had was, both areas, but it was probably the compliance part that took up 80% of my time. And that's kind of where it's kind of opened my eyes and got my interest.
Do you think about what it means for a company, an organization to be ethical? And I think it's so important not to say that any company or organization can be. It's not like this goal that we arrive to and then where we have it all kind of under wraps, but it is that continual journey. But what is the kind of vision that you are driving towards? What is it that you see? Okay, this is why this matters.
Oh, but that's an exciting, interesting question, a very big question, and very humble to maybe give a tiny version of that answer, but a very important question. How I see it or my take on it is that we all serve, a place in society, in the world. The companies do too. We play a very important role in Coloplast, in helping people who have an intimate healthcare need, and we actually have a very important role in making life easier for people that use our products. So you can say, if we take my current position, I think we have an absolute vital role to play, not as a standalone function, but actually as a tiny part of literally every direction or decision or conversation that we have as a company, playing a very important role for people having the ability to live a healthy and a passionate life with their healthcare needs at the same time. It's part of the foundation that you focus on integrity and on ethics.
So thinking about Coloplast, and it's a company that harkens back to the 1950s. And I was reading just a little bit on the website about the story behind the founding, which I found really interesting. And could you share something of that and how you see that mission is informing the company today?
No, but absolutely, you can say it's a story about us. You've probably read up on the nurse who they saw a problem, came together and developed the first product of its kind to support, at that time, very maybe not so discussed intimate healthcare need. So you can say the whole company is founded on seeing a real need for a human being and then trying to find a good solution, respecting the individual, making sure the individual can live a proper life with those conditions. And I think that's, the DNA of the company. Also, you can say what we have today, where we continue to innovate and bring products to our users that helps them and take into account all the nuances, which is, difficult, but to try and address some of the nuances of each individual human being, how they get to feel the best of themselves, right? And strive as the best of themselves with their healthcare needs. So that, I think it's an ingrained part of our DNA to serve that purpose and that mission of making life easier. So I think that you can literally say you can go back 50 years or more. I would say it's exactly the same DNA that you will find.
I mean, over the last podcast conversations that I've had here, so 2 episodes ago, and it's been really interesting to talk to several ethics and compliance leaders. So two podcasts ago, it was Klaus Moosmeyer at Novartis and the pharmaceutical company. Last episode, it was Gleb Bakalov at Ukrenergo, the Ukrainian state-owned energy company. What I think all three companies have in common here is that there is this critical purpose at the heart, the critical mission at the heart of what you do. So it's not, and I don't want to take any examples because I don't want to say anything bad about any other industry. But of course, it is something that you can clearly see. Okay, this matters. This is important for people's thriving. This is important for people's health and well-being. And yet, even with that purpose and that mission, things can corrupt it. Things can become, and that's one of my drivers when working with cultural health and writing on it and so on, is that I've seen that even in organizations that really have those fantastic missions, that over time, something happens that begins to corrupt. And when I say corrupt, I don't say it necessarily in a legal frame, but more that something starts to become unhealthy. We start valuing the wrong things. We start allowing the wrong kind of behavior. And suddenly we might still have this great mission, but the way we operate is not really aligned with that. The way we operate has a lot of negative consequences, or the cultural environment within our organization. And I've worked with organizations that have great missions and ended up in toxic messes and so on. So of course, that's what we're going to dig deep into together here in our conversation today. But as you think about that challenge, is there something that you just think, okay, this has been, I mean, you've been working at so many different companies, that this has been some of the key learnings that you take away from to really make sure that an organization stays aligned with that mission and that the way it operates is healthy all the way out?
No, but I think that's a really good point. And you can say, yeah, you're absolutely right. First and foremost, I think any global company or even regional companies would experience some challenges in now and then. That's just how it is. We are, it's companies are, you know, people. So, and people drive from different types of, you know, focus points and initiatives and so on. So, yeah, so that is just the case. I also agree with you that you can say if you are in certain healthcare markets and have a people-focused mission, you could say, yes, then you are less prone to have challenges in your organization because, yes, you have a clear purpose and you are serving good. Not necessary, right, as you also say. I think that you can definitely still have a less, you know, positive culture. You can have a culture that will taint the good purpose of the company, even hide behind the good purpose of a company. As well as you can have the same literally in non-healthcare, non-purpose-driven companies or less purpose-driven companies. Even though it is trend now that most companies try to tap into a particular purpose in order to drive and enhance the cultural belonging and the feeling of being part of something that changes something too, ultimately. You know, if you go back and say, well, I was recently in one of the bigger known Swedish companies, Sandvik, and you can say Sandvik is a, you know, B2B heavy metal industry player, but also a big part of the mining sector. And then you can say, how can you have a mission and a drive around the mining sector? And you can say, well, if you look at it very square, well, yes, then you're right. You know, you are selling vehicles that goes underground in maybe some of the industries that are not the most sustainable industries in the world, to be honest. But on the other hand, you can say if you're changing, as we did, we had a, you know, strategy of making the shift from, you can say, fuel vehicles and, you know, with a lot of emission to electrified fleets. And then you can say, hey, if you don't do that, at least then you have played into making, let's say, some of the mining activities that are needed in order to have batteries or to make that green, you know, transition, you have made that step green, or at least less burdensome for the environment in the pursuit of getting to a better planet. So I think, hey, even that was important, right? So it's about tapping into the company strategies and the messagings that are happening And then, of course, you're right. You know, you might have there might be a percentage-wise differences between a employee satisfaction survey in a mining company versus a healthcare company or, you know, a retail company. There might be nuances in that, but I don't think that tells the whole story.
No, I totally agree. And I think that there's even the aspect of moral licensing, that sometimes it can be even worse, like in, for example, in NGOs and so on, because you hide behind the great mission there. And so when in our conversations, you told me that you see Coloplast, so I think you have about 16,000 employees, and you see that these 16,000 employees are compliance officer. You see everyone as kind of carrying that responsibility. What does that mean to you?
Oh, that's, of course, just an easy way to beam up my functional size. But no, I honestly believe that, because what defines, you know, back to purpose and how our customers see us, our users, and you can say our users and their view and how they consider Coloplast is key, right? Because they are the ones that we are helping. And what defines us is our decisions and the choices we make as an organization, all the way down to, you know, a salesperson sitting somewhere in a remote country, having maybe a difficult conversation with a distributor or a person from the authorities. Every step here defines us. Some might have bigger impact, some might have less impact, but ultimately it defines us. It defines us both towards our external environment, but it even defines us towards maybe our employees, our management, but also how we act as a company. So you can say, when I talk about having 16,000 compliance professionals, it's simply just to highlight the fact that, hey, we should all do a bit of reflection. We will all come into difficult situations. We would all be a bit snow blind now and then. And then we need to be comfortable enough and be okay with raising that and talking to each other about it. And not necessarily call compliance every single time, because again, then we're not, you know, a big enough in the department. But hey, maybe you talk to your colleague in your department or your manager or someone else completely disconnected from that dilemma you're in. And hey, I promise you, I think that will help you. It will kind of just fine-tune your compass and your reflections. And then I'm sure you will take the right choice or decision. It's a little bit about talking about exactly all of us that are part of this.
And when we think about that, and I've often asked managers and also employees in many different organizations, do you see that as an organization that you have, or in your team, that you have ongoing robust conversations about values and dilemmas and so on? In most cases, people don't. So if I ask them, do you know the values or know the code of conduct in the organization? Are you aware of what it means and so on? Most people would say yes, even though if you might ask them what they are, they might not necessarily be able to share that. But then when we talk about whether they have those robust conversations, most of the time they don't see that they have them. And I don't think either so that they have created really those avenues for having those conversations. So my question to you, because I think it's one thing to train on a code of conduct, which is of course important, or say train or on our values or and so on, and say, okay, this is what's important to us. But then it's another thing to actually facilitate those conversations and make sure that they happen. How are you working with that challenge in Coloplast?
Oh, but I think we are kind of on a, I hate the word journey, because that typically ends, so maybe a bit more a transition or continuous enhancement, you can call it, of our program, of course, because we, of course, also want to make sure that it becomes as integrated as possible into the to our strategy and the company and the purpose ultimately we serve. But you're absolutely right that in most places, even some of the companies I've worked for previously, code of conduct and policies automatically becomes this. It's back to what we, as human beings, it's easier to cope with something which is, you know, has an end or is a product, something tangible in front of you. So when you have a code of conduct as a product, it quite easily becomes, yeah, but hey, you are the code of conduct. Hey, and I know the code of conduct, but do I really know it? Do you really know it? Right? And to be absolutely honest, I think if we are a little bit, you know, look a little bit inside ourselves as compliance professionals, it's not likely that anyone will know every word of our code of conduct anyway, right? we also need to be realistic here. The same goes for a number of the policies that we have. So what, as you talk about here, what we need to focus on, and what we are focusing on, is to tap into, why did we have this document in the first place? And do you really need to read all of it? No, you don't really. You need to read what is relevant for you, where you need guidance, where you need support. And then you need to know that you can apply it as a tool for reflection and support when you have a difficult situation where maybe the right answer is not, you know, as obvious as you had anticipated. Then you can use it as a tool to either look into the code of conduct, but also just use that as a pathway to have that conversation with a good colleague of yours. I'm absolutely fine with, you know, people. I don't need to wake up colleagues in the middle of the night and ask them what's on page 10 of our code of conduct, because that's not what this is about. It's about having a product that guides people in the direction of making life easier for people with intimate healthcare needs, which is our ultimate goal as a company, out of which we are part of. We are part of that, you can say.
You shared with me that you have really done a kind of rework of your code of conduct, and you reduced it by 60%. Could you share some of the reasoning behind that?
Absolutely. I think it comes back to, well, I'm programmed to challenge how things are done typically, and I love to do that. And this is a new product, you can say. You know, I did a re-ramp of a framework in Sandvik and the same in Falk before Sandvik, and they are not even comparable, because these products and these frameworks were suited for that purpose and that company and that culture and that mindset. So when we look at it in Coloplast, I think what is have been the thinking behind this initiative is that we have come to a code of conduct over years that had developed into a very formal language, very lengthy language, becoming this product that you can say is very much something back to what we talked about earlier that you just referred to. And for me, it was more important that we have a product where we show the organization that we have done our efforts to think about every single line and word, make it as simple as possible, so it's as easy as possible for our colleagues to find an answer, find support, or read it and use it. So we don't overcomplicate things, because we are part of a business activity and we need to meld in. We need to know our role, and we need to be as simplistic as possible, guiding people to feel comfortable to make decisions. And that's what our document do now. If it was 60% longer, you and I know that. If you, as a in a company, reach a document where you can familiarize yourself with 20% of it, again, we're just human beings, then we will immediately shut off for the remaining part, maybe not even listen to the 20% that is really of our interest. But if we change that mindset and change a product, make a product that is short and explains why this is exactly relevant for you in this particular position. And first and foremost, that by knowing this, it becomes a valuable instrument for you in your role supporting Coloplast with our mission ultimately. Then it melts into every single day, every meeting, every decision we make. And then it's a different product. So I think that's kind of the transition we have made with a more simplified product. I think for me, there was also a statement in the fact that I wanted to show that we as a compliance function, we are able to think commercially. We are able to think how we promote a product. How do we see ourselves delivering a product? And how is this product the most relevant product for our customers? Because that's important too. Because we don't have a safe spot where we can just send out what we feel is the right thing. We also have an obligation to know our stakeholders, our company, our colleagues, and how they operate and how they work, in order for us to then put in place a product that is the best possible product for Coloplast. And that's difficult, because it requires us to challenge ourselves. And I can promise you, we've been through a trillion revisions in this code of conduct. We have challenged ourselves. We have challenged every word. We have said, you know, how far is good enough? Constantly in our team. We have learned a lot also as a team. So we have strengthened our team spirit, our global mindset, at the same time as we've come out with a product that hopefully by the organization is more seen as not pointing fingers or telling yes or no or traffic lights, but actually helping them make their own reflection.
When I think about this vision for this work, and I'm trying over the years to just keep on trying to paint that vision in my own mind and in conversations with others. What is it really that we're trying to accomplish? And I'm thinking about something that Mikael Ahlberg, who you know at Getinge, told me many times. And it's, of course, this famous line from Scarface that says, oh, it's not personal, it's only business. But that business is personal. I mean, what I do, and I'm thinking about conversations I've had on the podcast with Professor Jim Dieter, who talked about how whether we speak up or we stay silent, that those actions are things that actually define us a lot as human beings. So, and of course, we spend much of our awakened time at work, and that defines who we are. And in my experience, most people, and whether that is kind of on a factory floor or in the C-suite, are very interested in these questions. But many times it feels like, I mean, they're very interested in questions of, who do I want to be? What do I want to define me? What do I want to define my work? What do I want to be known for? What is the kind of company I want to be a part of, create? What is the kind of work that we want to be known for? And so on. So, and reflecting on the dilemmas within that, people are interested in that. But many times it can instead just feel like all this is just about covering the back of the company. I mean, that we're just covering ourselves from risk, which is critical, of course, but it's not necessarily that motivating to me as an employee. But motivating to me is that I want to, and I think most people have that desire to do the right thing and have a positive impact on the people around them. But that is, of course, a lot harder than we might think it is. So what's your reflection on that?
I think that, you know, it is definitely difficult, and you can say, you know, from maybe the opposite side of where you're coming from, you can say if you come into a company, you can say you are an individual in a big engine room that serves a certain role as a company in society, in the world. And you can say, if you can decide then yourself, you can say there are certain stigmas that lies with certain roles and functions. So you can say, if you are in internal audit, internal control, compliance, legal, so on, there are certain characteristics that you are just programmed with, right? And also seen from the organization in looking in on these functions, there are certain characteristics that are just programmed. This is what we expect of you. This is what the role you serve in the company. And hey, that I think lies back in years. That's been like that for hundreds of years, because that's the skill set you come with. So if you sit in a company, and maybe rightfully so, what we've done in years back, you know, back in 2000 or even earlier than that, we probably all used our skill sets a little bit as a, you know, to flag a mandate or to show what purpose we served in the company, or what brought to the table, what value we brought to the table, you know, as a function. But you can also say, I think actually from the business point of view, from the business side, organizational point of view, nothing has really changed on that perception. They see these functions as the ones that are gatekeepers and supporting, you know, the backbone, making sure we don't violate rules or regulations, that we have proper controls in place so, you know, we can guide our employees where it's difficult and so on. They still see us like that. The very big difference, as I see it today, is that then us sitting in those functions, we can choose either to keep repeating that perception that everyone sees us as, like, you know, saying, you know, yeah, but we are legal, we are ultimately, we are compliance, we are the ones that make sure we don't get fines and penalties. We can keep saying that. I don't think necessarily we need to say that, because our stakeholders, our management teams, our executive management teams, our boards, they already know that. So I think what we can get a lot of benefit out of is actually to make an effort, be more, you can say, showing a business acronym, you know, is being more proactive, curious, interested in how the different aspects of the company works, and then apply our knowledge into those different aspects. that's very different. So, and I think sometimes I see that, I hear that still, you know, in networks among peers that, you know, that they might feel that they are seen very much like, you know, that go-to function who can give you, you know, an answer if are you going, you know, the right direction or are you going to jail? And hey, it might be the function too, the, you know, but ultimately isn't, for me, at least as a person, not super rewarding to have that role. You know, for me, it's rewarding to have a role where we meld in. We simply meld into the projects, the developments, the R&D, the innovation that happens and guides the employees, makes them comfortable that we can be transparent, that we can raise a concern, that we are allowed to make mistakes, that we can, you know, do these things and then be part of that. And then, hey, ultimately, they know that we'll help them. If the rules becomes the game, right, then we'll help them too.
Yeah, because ultimately it's not, and of course that might be hard to say, but I guess both, whether it's the HR function or ethics and compliance function or other functions, that it's not ultimately about you. It's about the people in the organization and the mission of the organization and then the success of that mission. And of course, the clients and the different critical stakeholders that you have.
Yeah, you can say it colors your approach any day. For example, when I was in Falit, which is a Danish healthcare and emergency company and ambulances, you can say the most vital part for Falit as a company is to make sure that the person who have, you know, are suffering, you have gone into an incident or have been into a car accident, that when they are picked up within minutes by the paramedics in that ambulance, that you can trust them, that they help you because they are in their most vulnerable space, right? That's the most important part. If you then sit in legal or compliance or finance in Falit, whatever you do, whether it's complex new processes or whatever it is of products, you need to still ultimately respect the fact that whatever you put in place should not jeopardize that trust of that 1 and 2 minute really fragile situations that they come into constantly because that's the role they serve. If I look at it in Coloplast, it's ultimately important for me and my function that whatever we put in place is made as easy as possible so that we make life easier, not for the users, well, ultimately, yes, but also life easier for our colleagues to do things the right way and make good choices. Because if we've done that, then we ultimately, down the chain, we help Coloplast serve even more people around the world.
You told me that you don't necessarily struggle or see it as much of a struggle to get that kind of buy-in or from your colleagues in the senior management. And of course, that's something that we hear so often from HR and ethics and compliance leaders that like struggle to get the buy-in, to focus on culture, to focus on ethics and so on. What do you see as the vital keys? And I think it connects a lot to what you've already been sharing and that perspective that you have of really being ingrained in the business.
I think it comes down to typically, you know, business DNA, right? You know, if you look at a management team, I'm very lucky to have, you know, the greatest support. I also feel actually constantly I need to prove myself. And that's because I need to be alert. I need to pay attention and I need to do my groundwork to understand our strategy, where we're heading, where do we have our strategic focuses? Where are we struggling as a company? What is, you know, these things? And, you know, I need to do a bit of groundwork continuously in order to be in line with the company mission and the strategy. And I, of course, believe if I do that, at least that's my experience so far. I can't really say that Coloplast is a unique place like that, but at least I'm of course very lucky to have that, you know, great support. But I do believe that if you, as a compliance professional, you kind of go a little bit off the formalities and very much focus on understanding all these elements. And hey, it's actually very exciting because, you know, you get to know a ton of stuff around, you know, the quality of our products, what role the particular products they serve, why we have thought about small, you know, smaller roles versus medium roles for a certain particular product, and all of those exciting elements and details. Again, in the tourist grand scheme of things, it plays in, right? And I'm a firm believer that it also gives a bit of credit among, you know, senior leadership and management that you're not like this separate function who talks about rules and regulations. We know that stuff, but we don't have to preach it constantly that we know that stuff. So I think for me, it's about storytelling. It's about communication and promotion very much.
Yeah. And like you said, showing real passion for the mission and the products and that an understanding of it. So that's super, super helpful. When we think about building this culture, and I think it's interesting that, for example, when we talk about quality or we talk about ethics or we talk about many other things, of course, these are very interconnected because, for example, if we think about psychological safety, for example, we think about the safety to feel that you can speak up. That's critical whether we talk about quality, because if you don't have that, you're going to, and we've seen the examples now at Boeing, for example, we think about it in terms of compliance risks and everything. So it's very connected. And I think very central to that is leadership, not just senior executives, but leadership at every level of an organization. And it's not that team members don't matter, because they, of course, do incredibly much. So it's just that leadership sends signals. They signal to the organization something about what is encouraged here, what is promoted here, what is not accepted here, what is turned a blind eye to here. And we can say however we want that, speak up or bring up issues. But if you have a manager who doesn't want to listen, or you have someone who doesn't give you any time or says, no, I don't care about that quality issue, because, or probably wouldn't say it exactly like that, but we don't care about that. We have to get this done by this time, and it has to cost this much or whatever. So what do you see as critical in terms of really empowering and equipping leaders to be that, in the sense, extension of the compliance function, but really leading from that place and sending the right signals? And what do you think are the critical skills that they need to have to do that?
I think you're right in the sense that, you know, the largest potential we can kind of tap into is the middle management layer, right? And, you know, because you can say top management and so on, yes, they are supportive of this. But then it comes down to like daily operation and, you know, and challenges that, you know, when you hit the ground running. And then that's where you also need to rely on your team leads and your middle management to be a great ambassadors for the program, but also for the company. And I think that's probably where you can get the most value out of a, you know, ethics program, by tapping into that whole area there. But I think ultimately it's about making people comfortable that there's no kind of stupid questions. I think that typically, you know, if you are a middle manager, you're also a little bit programmed to be that one that maybe aspire to a higher position in the future. You don't want to show weakness about dilemmas. You also might have teams that are younger and don't give you the same resistance. And then you feel like, okay, but, you know, we can, then I might not, you know, bring this up because it's not that relevant, or I could look weak, or, you know, I should have taken care of this myself. And I think it's about creating that safe space, creating or supporting the company culture by also creating, you know, a room to bring up questions, to be transparent. Hey, back to the no failure kind of culture, you know, we all make mistakes. We all come into situations where, you know, the gray zone is so wide and, you know, have so many nuances from light gray to really dark gray, that we might not even have the greatest chances of making the right decision. But we take them, as long as you then do take a considered decision, having weighed all the different aspects and discussed with a number of our peers or colleagues or managers and so on, and then we've decided now we stand behind this decision, then that's okay. So I think it's about creating that space where people are safe to do this. But you're absolutely right. I think the built-in dilemma here is that you also have career aspirations. You also have people who want to maybe become a head of or a new manager or move to an exciting position. And we are still in times and place where it can be seen as a little bit as a weakness. And then you can take a culture into that equation. Then you have even more dilemmas, right? Because you can say in certain cultures, you might not go to a manager and say, hey, listen, I have this situation with an employee and so on, because, or with a distributor or third party, because in that particular culture, you should, the, you feel that your manager would say to you, you should have dealt with that yourself. You, that's what you are, you're here for. And if they don't feel they can do it, they might, you know, downplay it, hide it. It might never play out. That's fair too. But it might play out and become something which is challenging. So for the company, for the role, for the function. So it's about creating a safe organization where you can raise things and you're not immediately judged from being either not skilled enough or not ambitious enough or so on. You know, I think that's fair. I think anyone should be able to raise a question or say, hey, I'm a little bit in doubt here. What is the right thing to do? Could we ever talk about that? Because it's never easy to do the right thing. Not always.
Yeah, in my work and research and in my book, I talk about habits that are critical to build cultural health and also where we stand up for the right values. And I really see humility as the starting point of that and the first practice there called embracing vulnerability. And I think what you're saying basically is, we need to model that throughout the organization. And you and I, before we started recording, we talked about being parents and the inherent beauty of that, but also the challenges. And I think one, of course, is modeling what the behavior that we model. And I think even there in parenting, one of the most important is actually humility. It's being able to show that we were wrong to, and that can create a signal to the organization that this is okay. If my manager, for example, if a middle manager sees their manager sharing examples of, or saying, I'm so sorry, I messed this up, or failed in this, or I think this is a really hard situation to deal with, and invite those conversations. And if a line manager can see their middle manager do the same thing, I think that becomes incredibly powerful. But I don't think it necessarily happens by itself. It needs to be a very intentional work to get there, because it doesn't come naturally, just as you've said.
You would say vulnerable. I fully agree with that. I think it's also about being curious and respectful of other people. One thing that I always try to work with in my teams is that I always worked on the assumption that no one would approach us or come to us, no matter where in the cycle of whatever project or activity they're doing, that we come in. Let's ignore the fact that they should have approached us in the beginning and not in the end. All of these factors that we always end up discussing. But if we just immediately think about the person actually approaching us with a dilemma, that's vulnerability, right? That they're coming here. If I meet that person, whether that's our kids, or it is a person in your sports club, it doesn't even need to be a parent, a child, example, but also, you know, in a sport club, or it's in your private life, or even in your company. If you then react by saying, oh my God, what is this that you're bringing to me? Are you aware the trouble we could be in? Are you aware of all these risks that we are now running? That type of response or reaction to someone coming to you showing vulnerability might in one particular example not mean a lot. It will mean a lot to that person, because that person will never come back and be vulnerable again. But it might also kind of channel out in the organization, as it could, you know, with family and private relations. So I think it's very important that we always look at people who come with a question or show vulnerability, that they come in best intentions. That is, for me, the starting point. I don't focus immediately on, why didn't you come to me 2 weeks ago? Because, hey, there are probably a number of different aspects behind it. And sometimes we all know that as human beings, we need to mature something literally by thinking of it now. And then slowly we mature the thought to a point where we feel, okay, now I'm comfortable. Now, you know, and now I can do this. And that can happen to anyone. So if people approach us, the first initial reaction should be to welcome that approach and talk about it. But that is how it is sometimes with experts and people who are very risk-focused, myself included. You know, you can sometimes think like, oh, why didn't you come 2 weeks before? Hey, listen, you know, this is obvious. You should have gone this. Because we know. But there's a big difference in thinking that and not expressing that to someone who comes and shows and needs guidance, right? Because ultimately, it doesn't really mean anything. Now you're here. Now we need to solve your challenge or your dilemma. And then we will find a solution, ultimately. Always find a solution, right? But it's that touch point. And I think if, you know how that is, if you have positive energy, just multiplies immediately. But if you get into negative energy, it takes so much longer to get back into a positive energy environment. So, and that's the same with the reaction if you show vulnerability in an organization. If you raise something and you are welcomed, that will spread, whether directly or indirectly, and fit with the, and strengthen the culture or support at least the culture and great mission of a company and not the contrary, right? So I think that is the touch point, which is key. We all need to be very focused on.
Martin, thank you so much. This has been really, really valuable, really interesting. And thank you for sharing your expertise, your experiences, your learnings. And final question to you is, how can people connect with you and follow your work? I know you're rather active on LinkedIn, for example.
People can get in touch with me on LinkedIn as an example. Feel free to connect here. Or reach out to me. I think I have my contacts also on LinkedIn. So people, of course, welcome to reach out if there's someone who wants to have an interesting conversation or have good practices that they've done, because that's another part. We are not done learning this transition now. Hey, it might look very different in 12 months from now. Completely new approach because the company will change or something will change. So we need to stay alert and dynamic in the flow, and we can learn a lot from. There's a lot of great initiatives around, starting with people and human beings.
Thank you so much, Martin.
Thank you for having me, Tobias. It's been a pleasure and a great conversation. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, it really means the world to us if you would share, rate, and review it on iTunes. We're super grateful for all the 5-star reviews and generous comments that we received so far. It really helps us take the message of purpose and integrity to a wider audience. And finally, don't forget to grab your free PDF on leadingtransformationalchange.com. See you in 2 weeks.